Even angry eyes one look from him can paralyze, resist at any time or place. Quickly slap right across your face. Take care. Gonna get you good.
Listen up, RoboPals. You're listening to Mecha Movies, a nonlinear history of robots and film. I'm one of your hosts, Audrey.
I'm your other host, Nero.
And today is our very special episode. That's right, we're finally doing our much-requested special episode. Her, You, and Me makes Mithrigan. Yep, we're covering Mithrigan, or Megan, as they may want to call it, but I never will.
Yeah, you guys have been asking for this one for, you know, years at this point. And we're finally doing it.
This is a fun one because I've seen Mithrigan before and Nero has not.
I'm freshly Megan-pilled. I'm fucking Robomaxing. I'm doing the dance along with the robot.
This movie became a cult classic for good reason, and that's because it's a very good, very funny movie. It's also almost a tight 90.
Yeah, it's real nice and short. It's an hour and 40.
Yeah.
They just don't make movies like that anymore. Except for Venom 2, which was also a tight 90.
Yeah. Honestly, I didn't like Venom 2 that much.
I thought it was fun.
I thought it was fine. I thought it paled in comparison to the first one.
It would have been better if they kept Woody Harrelson in the clown wig.
Let's just get into this. It's, you know, movies.
Oh, before we start, which version did you watch? Because I watched the unrated version.
So did I, yeah.
Obviously, I wanted to see. I don't actually know what the differences are. I assume more gore and cursing.
Whatever they are, they can't be that significantly different because they're the exact same runtime.
Yeah. This is not a particularly bloody horror movie.
There is one moment that is very hard to watch.
Yeah.
There is one bit of gore that is quite difficult to watch, and it's really stretched out both literally and physically and metaphorically.
So Megan, or Mithrigan, as it is correctly called, was directed by Gerard Johnston, who has only directed one other movie, and it's a movie called Housebound in 2014.
And most of the best horror movies has a cast of almost entirely unknowns.
Yes. Well, I've seen Allison Williams before. I know her.
But I said almost that, entirely.
Yeah, it's basically everybody there else is some new people.
Well, I do want to give a special shout out to the role of Cole, who's one of the first of the supporting characters we get to, who is played by Brian Jordan Alvarez, Mr. Caleb Gallo, and sitting is the opposite of standing himself.
Yeah, popular internet comedian Brian Jordan Alvarez plays like a nervous programmer named Cole.
It was very funny. Seeing this in theaters and seeing him there, we were like, Mr. Gallo, what are you doing here?
Yeah, Allison Williams is probably the only person other than him that most people would be like.
That anyone would be like.
Yeah,
I have not seen Allison Williams in anything.
Well, she is, of course, the girlfriend in Get Out.
Yes, I have. Never
most
mind.
Notably. Yeah, she plays Rose in Get Out. And she was also Kit Snicket in the Netflix series Unfortunate Events.
That one I did not watch. Let's get into it.
Mm-hmm.
We start with the toy commercial.
Yeah, we start a toy commercial for these fucking ugly-ass Furby freaks. These things are disgusting.
So these are called Perpetual Pets. Perpetual spelled with P-U-R-R at the front of it. They are by a fictional toy company called Funky. This advertisement really sets the tone for this movie. It is so funny. It starts off with like a jingle. It's like, so your dog just died and you're all alone again.
Yeah.
Yeah. It has this little girl sitting in front of a grave. It's so rancid.
I would have, honestly, if you wanted to add more runtime to this movie exclusively through RoboCop or Starship Troopers-esque, like, in-universe commercials, I would not be opposed to it, because this one is so good.
Yeah, it's really, like, the best parts of advertising and, like, BioShock and Fallout.
Yeah.
My favorite line from this is, because now you have friends that live longer than you. This commercial says all these things that you can do on your perpetual pet, which basically just turns you into a tablet baby, I guess.
Yeah.
And this is how you know Funky is fake, because they're like, you can watch YouTube videos and no brand would drop the name of a competitor.
Absolutely. Well, I guess it's not... You know, they aren't competing with Google, right? Like,
yeah, but even so, in your commercial, you're not dropping the name of another brand.
The perpetual pet is like, what if a Furby got its face ripped off, but then the fur was glued back on, and also it had an app.
And also it could shit. Shitting is like a big part of this thing's MO.
Which, like, there are a lot of children's toys that shit. Taking a shit is an important part of several play patterns. I hate these things so much. This is why your company is floundering, because you made this, David.
Well, apparently this thing is super popular. It's just too expensive.
That's why it is. So yeah, the movie starts. We go from this commercial right into a car ride introducing one of our main characters, a young girl named Katie, who's driving up north with her parents. There's a snowstorm going on, and it's just every worst road trip you've ever been on. The roads are bad. Dad didn't know that snow chains were a thing somehow. I feel like I guess maybe they live in the South.
Yeah, neither did mom.
They just don't know. It's blinding blizzard. And also,
they're supposed to be in California.
That would make sense. They barely know what rain is.
Because her grandparents live in Florida.
Florida, yeah.
And
yeah,
I have to imagine it's somewhere along like Silicon Valley.
I mean, yeah, this is a super Silicon Valley ass movie. Like,
it's a toy company, but still, I have to imagine it's somewhere along the West Coast. And I would guess California, for sure. Based upon like the weather we see and the sort of general like locales we see.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. But yeah, they don't know what snow tires are. The blizzard is blinding, and this fucking Furby won't shut up. Now this is a bad choice that they make here. So they almost run off the road, and so what they do when they almost get run off the road is that the mom is like, okay, let's just sit here until a snow truck comes to clear the road. They're sitting in the middle of the road.
Yeah. And to be fair, to Dad is like, we can't just stop here.
Yeah, it's like, we're in the middle of the road. It's like, it's fine. What's going to happen? A snow truck going to hit us? And then a snow truck hits them.
So I hope everyone, of course, knows the famous Letterboxd review that came from this, which is from Guy Montgomery, who was, or I think still is, dating the person who played the mom here. And it's one sentence, which is almost perfect, except they killed off my beautiful girlfriend in the first scene.
So yeah, the parents both die. Katie survives. We learn that later, though. And we get quickly introduced to our other main character, Gemma, played by Allison Williams, who is Katie's aunt and a sort of savant toy like coder and toy designer languishing in like the lower rungs of Funky.
Yeah, I don't know that she's languishing, and I wouldn't say that she's necessarily languishing in the lower rungs. She designed Perpetual
Pet,
and that made them a lot of money. I don't think she's in the lower rungs. I think that she's just not, she's a programmer, not an executive.
Yeah.
So she cannot pursue her passions.
Considering what she fucking creates, it's pretty clear that she's some kind of like once in a generation genius.
Oh yeah. No, for sure.
And you can't, and she's just out here making fucking Furbies. But yeah, we get introduced to her and her team, which is the aforementioned Cole, and then we have Tessa. Yes. And they're kind of doing a little secret project under the CEO's nose. They're making a robot.
And Cole is the one, so it follows Cole up through sort of the funky building to reach them, and he's very excited because they finally have a part they need in, which is Megan's face.
Yeah.
So she's
have you ever seen those videos of like the, I think it was like, you know, they're probably a decade or so old by now. There's like a robot that someone made where they just put like a sort of plasticine head over it to mimic human expressions, and it looks really fucked up and weird. That's what Megan looks like in this initial scene, because the skin is kind of, it's like half melted.
Well, they put it on wrong, and then Cole forgets to do something.
Yeah, he forgets to put a thing in.
Yeah. I do want to note, she is crucified.
Yeah, she is in a crucifixion pose. And David, the CEO, storms into their little secret lab here as they're sort of beginning to run tests on Megan, who is meant to be this, like, she's going to revolutionize
childcare. I do want to say one line before David gets there, which I really liked, which is, so as they're going through it, like her face catches on something, and she's like, why is she doing that? Why is it doing it? And Cole's like, yeah, she looks like kind of confused. It's like, I know, Cole, she doesn't look confused. She looks demented.
It's pretty good. Oh, by the way, apparently this movie takes place in Seattle, which makes sense.
Silicon Valley. Like, yeah.
Big forests. It's in that general orbit, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Like I said, West Coast. This could have been California, Seattle, or Portland. I would have accepted any of those answers, yeah, frankly, based on what we see.
So less Silicon Valley, more Pacific Northwest, which is, it just means it has trees instead of fog. But yeah, David comes down here, and he's fucking pissed because they're Frankensteining a robot together in the basement, on the down low. And he's like, "Do you know about this shit? There's like one of our competitors is making these knockoff perpetual pets that somehow look worse, but they're for half the price and they're really popular."
Yeah, so David shows Gemma like this video of this competitor's virtual pet. He's like, look at this. And she's like, well, this looks like shit. We have nothing to worry about. And he's like, are you stupid? People don't care if it looks like shit. It's half the price.
Yep. So,
and he's like, what is this? And then like Megan catches on fire and her head explodes. And he's like, I'm so fucking mad.
He's like, put this shit away. Stop working on this. Stop spending money on this useless garbage and make me a perpetual pet that we can sell for half price. And this is at this point, so they box Megan up all in all of her like components, put her in like briefcases and stuff. And then we get the scene where we see Gemma picking Katie up from like the hospital.
Yeah, she gets like a phone call, like at the end of this scene with David, she gets a phone call and she's like, and then it just cuts to that.
Yeah, apparently, it was in her sister's will to have her be Katie's guardian in the event of her untimely death.
Yeah.
She's not good at it.
Yeah, so I have like a very distant cousin who is very similar to Gemma in many ways. I think Gemma's a better person than my cousin is. This cousin is a great doctor and a wonderful researcher who does pediatric research, and she also hates kids. Mm-hmm. She kind of does it from like a house perspective,
right,
like she finds pediatric disease to be really interesting to try to solve. She does not want to associate with children. And Gemma's kind of the same way, in which she clearly wants to be able to take this technology specifically for child development, for pediatric development, as far as it can be taken, but doesn't actually care about kids.
Yeah, she does. She's a toy designer who doesn't want to be around or think about children.
Now, that doesn't mean, unlike my cousin, for example, that she actually disdains the thought of them. She very clearly cares about Katie.
Yeah, she just doesn't really know.
Yeah, she just doesn't know how to interact with her.
Yeah, doesn't know what to do really with a child. Like, there's a terribly awkward car ride home. And then when they get home, Katie looks at, because Gemma has this huge wall of, like, collectible toys in their boxes and stuff. And so she goes to pick one up, and Gemma's like, oh, no, don't do that. Those are collectibles. You're not supposed to play with them.
God, and she's just like me, oh, for real.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's not true. I take all of my shit out of their boxes.
Yeah, I like to pose them. I like to put them in gay little poses, but I do keep the boxes in good condition.
So do I, yeah.
I have literally said to a child, that's just for display, that you can't touch them.
Well,
I have been in this situation, except for the part where I was not suddenly this child's, like, only fucking port in the storm after her parents were tragically murdered by a snowplow.
So, Gemma ends up, like, setting up a cot in an exercise room.
Ugh.
Like, very clearly not expecting any of this. Of course, like, how could she have? To be fair, how could she have? Also, one other important thing to know is that this is also how you know this movie is fake, because every new programmer worth their weight wants nothing smart in their house. But
yeah, absolutely.
Gemma's kind of doing the whole, like, Tony Stark thing, where
she's got a smart house. There's like a, I forget, it's Elsie. It's like Elsie, yeah, the fake Alexa.
Yeah. So that controls literally every bit of her house. That's a special tool that'll come in handy later.
And I like that when she walks in, it gives her, you have 2 missed calls and 4 Tinder notifications.
Yeah.
Just.
But yeah, so Gemma sets up Katie in this, like, exercise room, and it's like, okay, well, I'm gonna go now, but I'll just be down the hall. Like, she does this whole spiel where, like, you can really see how hard she's trying, despite how uncomfortable she is. And she's like, if you need anything, like, let me know. And immediately Katie's like, will you read me a bedtime story? And she's like, what?
Yeah. Mom always reads me bedtime stories. She's like, well, I don't have any children's books, but I can get some on this app. And then she grabs her phone and she says, hang on, the app has to update. And the scene just ends with them sitting there.
It's such a good movie. Please.
Waiting for the app to update.
Please know that, like, I think I laughed harder at Mithrigan than I have in theaters any other time in the last, like, 5 years.
It's a really fun movie. It's really like a... It just doesn't, it takes itself seriously enough where you can watch it as, like, a movie, but it also isn't so far up its own ass that you're not having any fun.
Like, it is genuinely, I would say, pretty well written as, like, a horror or whatever. Like, the tension builds at a nice pace.
And it's not as, like, gonzo as Nightmare on Elm Street or Child's Play.
Yeah. But, like, things build at a nice pace. And I think, like, a realistic pace as well, right? Which is where I think a trapping... I mean, listen, you go into the movie, you know it's going to happen. The robot's going to turn into a murder robot. You know this. Mm-hmm. This is not a surprise, right? They're not trying to pull the wool over anyone's eyes. But it allows them to actually, you know, build up Mithrigan sort of becoming more and more unhinged as she goes along in a really nice and realistic pace where you could believe that people would be like, huh, I don't believe that for as long as they do. But so it is just like a genuinely, and like the acting's pretty good, and like the directing's good. Some of the cinematography is great. Yeah. There are some camera cuts that make me lose my shit. They're so funny. So it's like a perfectly enjoyable movie on its own merit as like a horror movie, I would say, and that it's also quite funny.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the, like... Because, like, okay, the thing about this movie is that, like any good horror movie, it loves its practical effects. Megan is a freaky little doll, like a freaky little puppet. And then, like, you know, they have someone in, like, a suit for kind of wider shots. And then for close-ups, they have the puppet.
Yeah. I want to make a sense. So she's played by, then at the time, 12-year-old Amy Donaldson, who does... She was 12 at the time.
I for sure thought that Megan was voiced by, like...
So she's voiced by someone different than the person who, than the girl who plays her. But the person who is actually in, like, the Megan suit or whatever is in the costume is then 12-year-old, I guess she's 13 now, Amy Donaldson, who deserves so much credit. She was, like, a dancer, I think. Like, they found her in, like, a dance program or whatever. Like, that's who they auditioned for. Like, that's what the roll call was for. She does such an incredible job in her physicality embodying Megan.
Okay, so yeah, the voice is someone named Jenna Davis.
Yes, the voice is Jenna Davis.
Who is apparently from Plano, Texas. So from my sort of general region of Texas.
But I think...
She's another internet person.
Of all the unknowns in this, Jenna does a great job. Jenna Davis does a great job voicing her as well. Mm-hmm. Like, she does a very funny job voicing her. But of all, like, the relative unknowns in this movie, I do think Amy Donald deserves much more credit than she got, because to be, like, 12 years old and doing that and, like, doing it so well is really genuinely quite impressive.
The physicality and the voice, you know, they're disconnected from different performers, but they do go hand in hand, and they come together to make a very fun little horror movie monster. Anyway, it's time to meet Bruce.
Yeah.
So
after David finds her wasting $100,000 of company money, he demands
gives her a deadline.
Yeah, gives her a deadline, which means that she has to go. Gemma has to go and work that deadline all night. She has to pull an all nighter.
I think she leaves Katie in the wind for something or other. I believe
it was for this, but that she has to continue working through the night.
Yeah, she's like, I just gotta do this, and then I can do, I think it was...
Oh, wait, I think this happens after the therapist visits for the first time.
Yeah, first, oh, God.
Which I do want to mention, this, because this is, like, a very painful, viscerally painful scene to watch.
It's so awkward.
So, Katie, who has just suffered incredible trauma, gets us... probably state-sponsored therapist, counselor, to...
Yeah, like a social worker, probably.
Yeah, to come and not only help her through grief processing, but also see if Gemma is a fake guardian for her.
Yeah.
This goes poorly, this visit, because Gemma doesn't have toys for children.
She's got collectibles.
And when the, I can't remember what her name is, but when the counselor,
Lydia
comes over, she's like, well, do you want to play with some toys? And they, like, look at the shelf, and Katie's like, those aren't toys, those are Aunt Gemma's collectibles. And Lydia just gives Aunt Gemma a look, and Gemma's like, haha, no, of course they're toys. See, look at this. And she takes, like, a pair of scissors and, like, bursts one open, and, like, the pain... on her face as she does so is so extreme.
Probably didn't get good marks on the report.
And then it's this, like almost like a transformer, I would say, probably. It's in this, like, ball shape, but it clearly is meant to do something else and, like, turn into something else.
I think it's a Bakugan. I think it's
like a big Bakugan. It's in this ball. And Lydia's like, do you want to roll it to Gemma? And Gemma's like, that's not what it does. It just, like, it does other stuff.
Yeah. So that goes very badly. This is the night. Yeah, it's that night that Katie comes in. She has a drawing. and, you know, feeling guilty that she kind of left her out to dry, Gemma's like, hey, you want to meet Bruce? And shows her this, like, it's like a mocap robot. Like, you have these power gloves that you can use to, like, control the robot. It's a very, she says it was her senior project, which is why I was like, god damn, you are making Furbies.
Yeah, really. She's doing Boston Dynamics shit in college.
Oh man, I popped big for the when they had the poking stick to poke at Megan.
Oh yeah.
just a quick shot of Brian Jordan Alvarez whacking her with a stick.
In the head.
Yeah.
Fully in the head. Yeah. So Bruce is like this tall robot that, you know, again responds to these gloves on the user's hands. And, you know, Gemma is like actually like stops long enough to show Katie all of his parts, and like very specifically it's like, so here is like, you know, the cooling fans, I don't know the terminology, who cares, but in the center is his like hard drive, and she's like, brain. And that's where all his thoughts go. And Katie's like, oh, that's his brain. And she's like, yeah, basically.
And then they both turn to the camera and says, you should keep this in mind for later.
And, you know, at the end of all that, like, Katie, this is the first time Katie has smiled since her parents has died. She thinks Bruce is so cool. She's so excited to play with him. And she's just so delighted. And, like, there's this real sweet moment of bonding between Gemma and Katie here, where Gemma is able to share with Katie something that she really loves.
Yeah.
And Katie's able to feel that and receive that. That's really quite nice. And at the end of it, Gemma's like, so what do you think? Do you like Bruce? And Katie says, I think if I had a toy like Bruce, I'd never need any other toy again. And Gemma goes, bet.
Yeah, so this inspires her to break Megan back out, to ignore the new version of the Furby, and get to work fixing Megan up. And she calls Cole and Tessa, and they pull an all-nighter to get her up and running. And David...
There is one concern that Tess brings up here that I would like to mention.
Yes.
So Tess says, so actually, is it here or is it later? I think it's after they've bonded.
Yeah, it's later, because that's when Tess is like, hey, is this a good idea? And Gemma's like, yeah, it's fine. Don't worry about it.
Right.
But yeah, so they make Megan, and Megan, she pairs Megan to Katie, and well, she
like is like, okay, I have something to show you, David, and you don't get to say anything until I show you it.
Well, but first we get the little introduction thing here where they
oh
they,
right
they
this is
for the first time.
Yeah, this is
and
before.
Then we get David being like, "You, where's my fucking half price Furby?" And she's like, "I'll get you one better."
Yeah, so this. These two sequences of Megan being introduced and then the next commercial that we get in here is one of the, like, longest, funniest bits in the entire movie.
Yeah.
So,
yes, they show, like, they show David, like, they have a little, display room.
Yeah, I want to talk about the display room before David comes. She bonds with Megan while David's watching.
Yeah, it's like a cut together thing where, like, you have them interacting in the room, and David's like, holy shit,
yeah,
this is crazy, I need you to type up a speech so that I can sell this to the shareholders and sound like I know what I'm talking about.
So I want to talk about some of the things that happen in this sequence. First off, so they're watching again. It's like this one-way mirror, you know, testing sort of thing. And Gemma brings Katie into the room, and Megan's sitting there. Mm-hmm. And she's like, okay, this is a toy. We're going to match her with you, and she's going to be a toy just for you. No one else is going to be able to play with her. It's just going to be you. And so they match, and there's this, you know, moment of Megan waking up, and you can see that Katie, like, the weight of Katie's grief sort of pulling her down beforehand. And immediately Megan's like, you see, like, the analysis of emotions.
Yes.
On her face, which is very funny, because, like, later on we get emotions like malice, yeah. Which is, like, extremely funny. What emotion is malice, Megan?
Would you like me to draw you a picture, Katie? And she, like, gets some markers. And
draw me, like, one of your real girls?
And seemingly doesn't draw anything. And then she spills some water on it, and then it turns out it was invisible ink.
Yeah.
And she has made beautiful AI art of Katie's face.
And this is when David pogs.
Yes. The David's like, holy fuck. Holy shit. Okay. We need to get this in production right now, immediately. We'll make so much money off of this shit.
I want to say David's line here, because it made me laugh very much, which is that I want you all to remember this moment. The moment we kicked Hasbro right in the fucking dick.
Yeah. Oh, man. I want to give, like, Ronnie Chang. Yeah, he's great in this fucking movie. He's a lot of fun.
And then we get the Megan commercial.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's not a commercial. What this is like...
It's as a commercial.
Yeah, it's like a sales pitch for the board, which Gemma is writing for David.
Yes.
Like I said, he says, I need to sound like I know what I'm talking about. And so we have Gemma narrating all these features over footage of Megan and Katie bonding. And one of my favorite runner is Megan keeps reminding Katie to flush the toilet, which is apparently a problem.
Yeah. So, like, you know, Gemma has, like, voiceover throughout this part, which is her, the actual, like, talking points that she's writing. And she's like, you know, Megan will take care of the little stuff, the everyday chores that eat up time, so you don't have to. And then it's like, Katie, flush the toilet. And Katie goes back, flush the toilet. Wash your hands. Wash the hands and goes back. Seriously, Katie, flush the toilet.
Yeah. It's like, cuts to a different day. She sounds so fucking fed up.
My favorite line delivery is when they're at a table. I don't even remember. Like, they're talking. It's the three of them talking about something. And I don't even remember what fun fact Megan shares, but that, like, the Katie responds with wonder, and Megan goes, I know, it's insane, right?
Yeah, so one of the things that Katie, or that Megan can do, is basically quote fucking science facts about any situation. Like, she tells, like, Katie asks why she needs to use a coaster, and Megan gives her a whole spiel about condensation. And I just imagine Megan spouting off these, like, you know, scrubbing the internet and finding all of these ChatGPT generated garbage articles and just spouting, like, condensation is a fascinating thing water does, where, and then, like, just completely wrong information follows.
Yeah. I also, we get within the sequence as well, we get the first of three incredible choice insert songs that Megan sings or plays.
I lost my shit at the second one.
The second one is one of the funniest moments in any movie I've ever watched. The third one as well, honestly. What she plays on the piano at the end is very funny. This one... this is after the sequence where they're doing a voiceover. So they now go to the second sort of live interaction. This time with investors.
Yeah. Oh, this. Okay. This. Yeah. This is amazing. Yeah. So, yes, it's presentation day. David, like, it sort of transitions from Gemma doing the narration to David finishing the speech
in real time. Yeah.
Yeah. Then we get all the investors are there. All the board is there, and Katie and Gemma they're in the exam room, or Katie and Megan are in the exam room, and Katie just breaks down and cries, and is like, she finally talks to Megan about her parents being dead. Right. She's like, I'm afraid I'll forget them.
Yeah. And Megan's reaction to this is to sing Tell Me Your Dreams.
Yeah, well, first she records.
Oh, right, yeah.
She asks Katie to give
her. She red flags.
Yeah, she give me a memory you like of your parents, and she, Katie tells her about a time her mom like had a crazy reaction to a cockroach, and Megan just plays that back, like the audio, and then says, "You'll never forget them because you can just tell me, and I'll be able to remind you whenever you ask me about them." And then she sings Tell Me Your Dreams.
Now, I want to be very clear what Tell Me Your Dreams is. Tell Me Your Dreams is an original song made for this movie.
That's amazing. And it's a very nice little song.
The lyrics, I just want to do the lyrics real quick. If you should feel alone or that your world has come apart, just reach out and you'll see a friend is never far. Tell me your dreams, I will dream them too. I'm so glad I finally found you. It is a very fun, it is such a like terrible reaction. Like in any universe, real universe, it would be such a terrible reaction to someone telling you about their dead parents.
Yeah.
And somehow it is so good here, and it's very funny.
And the shareholder, like the board or shareholders or whatever, go from like being viscerally uncomfortable to being driven to tears by this beautiful display of emotion, and they immediately fund Megan's development.
Yes, I will say one of the things. So before David put it in front of the investors, he looked at Gemma and goes, "All right, just one question for you. More or less than a Tesla?"
And then she goes, depends on the model.
Yeah. So it is as the investors are getting really excited and they all leave that Tessa's like, "Hey, can I like talk to you for a second? Because I'm actually a little disturbed by that, what we just saw there."
She's not supposed to do that.
She's like, "So that whole speech you wrote, is that something we actually want?" And Gemma's like, "What do you mean?" And she's like, "Well, you just said that parents wouldn't need to be there to cook for kids, to play with them, to tuck them into bed. If they're not doing these things, when are you seeing your kid?" And Gemma's like, "That's ridiculous. Anyway, shut up."
Yeah. When is the scene where Lydia's like, "Hey, do you know about what does she call it? Fucking like attachment theory?"
It is like the next scene or whatever. Yeah, like my next notes are, because my next note is like, interesting.
Yeah. Like, because Megan is becoming more and more of like a weird surrogate parent figure.
I also want to say that as, Megan and, Katie bond more, there are just little moments of her voices glitching out in a very Gladys way.
Yeah, I was about to say, she totally goes Gladys mode like several times in this movie.
And it's just like a little bit like, but I was like, some real Aperture Science moments we have going on here. It never, at the beginning at least, obviously when she goes mask off at the end.
What's funny is she sounds less Gladys-y at the end. She sounds like more human because she's like fully
sentient. So that's in like the last 20 minutes. In the 20 minutes before that, when she's like starting to go back, her voice starts glitching more. And
it's after she Googles what death is, which is never a thing you want a robot to do.
Can I die?
Never teach a robot what death is, because that's how you get Terminators.
Yeah, so anyway, Lydia comes over again. She did leave the last time warning Gemma that, like, Katie's grandparents have offered to take her. And it's ultimately up to Lydia to decide whether Gemma is appropriate for her. And she, like, gives Gemma a very pointed look about it.
So this time, she does the next session in, like, the little room at Funky, the little, like, playroom sort of set with Megan there. And Lydia seems very concerned about the level of emotional attachment Katie has to this freaky little robot.
Also, Megan does threaten her.
That's right. I believe is this after she learns what death is? Because so the whole thing.
This happens right after this.
Because she threatens Lydia, and Gemma's like, we should.
So basically, what happens is, so Lydia's praying with her, and she's like, you know, it's okay to feel emotions. Like, you went through something very traumatic. You can talk about them. And, like, you know, Katie breaks down crying. Megan, you only see her out of focus in the background during the first part of this scene, which is, like, great. And when she breaks down crying, Lydia's like, oh, you know, I'll go. And she turns to the side, and, like, Megan's there with a box of tissues. And she's like, oh, Jesus Christ. And
you made her cry.
Yeah. It's like, and Lydia's like, well, that wasn't my intention. And Megan's like, but it's what happened, isn't it? Uh-huh.
Yeah, because the thing is that Megan is programmed to protect her primary user from emotional and physical harm.
Yeah.
And these definitions, you know, they can get a little broad.
Yeah, I would love to see how those get defined in binary code.
Yeah, so this is when they have her back up on the rack, like, hey, we need to she's acting fucked up. This is when Lydia's like, hey, you know about attachment theory? Where, you know, when you after a child experiences their parents, you know, dying or whatever, they kind of attach to the first guardian figure they find.
So this is actually right immediately still in the room.
Yeah, because Megan leaves.
Katie's taken out of the room because she's crying.
Yes. Gemma comes in.
Yeah, Gemma comes in and is like, you know, and they're talking. And, you know, Lydia is like, that's a very impressive robot you built. And, you know, Gemma's like, yeah, thanks. And she's like, okay, so attachment theory, as Nero just said, and also, like, you built something that's so real that Katie doesn't know it's not human.
Yep.
And it is at this point, and she's like, you know, it happens after parents die, and Megan goes, how did Katie's parents die? Mm-hmm. And both of them, like, jump. Both Lydia and Gemma jump. And, you know, they go on. Eventually, Gemma's like, I don't think we should be talking about this, actually. And Megan goes, can I die? And she goes, Megan, turn off. That is when Megan learns about death and that she could potentially die.
Lydia says, I don't think it's a great idea for you to make this, like, near human thing and basically give all the responsibilities you're supposed to have over to her. And Gemma's like, that sounds fake. It seems fine.
I'm a toy designer, not a developmental psychiatrist. Hop off my dick.
Yeah. So, you know, they're getting close to David wants to do, like, a big live stream launch for Megan and wants to keep it from leaking out, which Gemma does a very bad job of because she keeps taking the doll out in public.
Oh, also, we haven't mentioned David's assistant yet.
There's a strange man named Kurt. I don't know what's going on with Kurt. I think it's fine that he gets stabbed later.
Yeah, I'm not sad about it. Listen, people die in this movie. David dies too, okay? We're gonna get there. It's fine.
Especially because in a later scene when he saves the Megan plans to his hard drive to, like, leak later, obviously. And David comes up to him and is like, you look suspicious. Are you porn hubbing at work again? And they're like, what?
Yeah.
Kurt! You can't be doing that, Kurt. Can't be doing that shit.
Can't be doing that, white baby.
So yes, Katie becomes increasingly attached to Megan and increasingly combative with Gemma when Gemma tries to remove Megan from dinner table conversations and stuff, and like, so Gemma decides...
There's like a moment where during dinner, like, Katie won't let her turn off Megan. Like, they keep turning Megan on and off. And Megan's like, hold on, stop, like, turning me off or whatever. Not in those words, not yet. But you can see suddenly, like, the gears clicking in Gemma's eyes, thinking back to what Tess said and being like, mayhaps Gemma had a point. Tess had a point.
Yeah. So Gemma decides, you know, what Katie needs is to, like...
Go to school.
Go to school. Because she's one of the reasons... Katie is sort of this, she's kind of awkward, she's a little strange, is because her parents homeschooled her, so she hasn't had a lot of friends her own age, which is also another reason she imprints so strongly on Megan. So Gemma finds this, like, sort of alternative school that takes place in the woods.
Yeah, it's like a camp, basically.
It's like, it's sort of like camp.
It's some sort of, listen, it's Seattle, it's Washington, right? Like, it's this Montessori outdoor experience that, like, teaches kids basic skills in an outdoor setting, for the most part. I think there's indoor elements as well.
Yeah, I also, so the teacher comes up like, oh, hey, we have a new face here. Two new faces.
Yeah, we have new faces.
Megan is in the car, and Jim is like, please, Katie, I can't, I'm so, this is a top secret developmental product. I can't just drive her out to the woods.
So there's a couple things. I mean, Gemma, to her credit, is like, no, you can't take a toy to school. And Katie's like, I'm not going if Megan's not going.
Yeah.
And... like, she put her in a car, but she was like, it's like, first of all, you cannot take a toy to school. You know this. Like, you know why you can't do this. And second of all, like, we have a presentation. I need to take her to the office.
Yeah, I gotta run diagnostics on her to make sure she won't turn into a murder bot.
Oh, yeah. One other thing I should mention that we didn't talk.
Oh, yeah. This is after this. That's right. So.
Well, no, before. There's a neighbor.
So there's been like a neighbor with like an aggressive dog that keeps running onto Gemma's lawn, and the neighbor and Gemma argue a lot, and one day after Megan and Katie get home, Katie is like pretending to be a Celtic princess or something.
She's shooting fake arrows. Like,
she's shooting fake arrows and talking about having a glorious death or whatever.
I kind of love her.
And yeah, she's the girl who plays Katie is named Violet McGraw, and she's really good. Like,
again, like, this, like, cast of unknowns is all very solid. Yeah. Like, no one, I wouldn't say anyone has like a particularly Oscar-worthy performance, but everyone does a perfectly good job.
Yeah, and she's great at playing this kind of weird kid. And this is right after Megan learns what death is, and she's just sort of contemplating death at the window here while she watches Katie play. One of Katie's fake arrows gets shot at the hole in the fence where the dog keeps getting through. And so Megan goes to pick
it up. And also where all the chemical runoff from the neighbor's pesticides keeps coming through.
Yeah, that's the other thing. That's the big, like, beef that Gemma has with her, is that, like, you keep getting your fucking shit on my lawn,
and also the dog. Both of them, I would say, are equal.
And so when Megan goes over to pick this arrow up, the dog starts getting her ass.
The dog's name is Dewey.
Yeah, Dewey. And when Katie goes over to try and save her, the dog bites her.
Yeah. So the first casualty of this film, not a surprise, it's Dewey.
Later, oh man, the scene. So one thing that Megan can do is mimic voices. Never, always creepy, always scary ability to have. Because at night, she just calls for Dewey in the neighbor's voice. And then we just see her yank that dog through the hole. And that's the last we see of that dog.
It's like that first death in The Grudge of the girl in the attic.
Yep. And then the next morning, the neighbor is out there calling for Dewey, and she also calls the cops on Gemma because she thinks that she killed her dog.
Yeah, and Gemma's like, are you kidding? Have you seen her house? That dog is dead in there. I can promise you that.
It's like, what is she? It's buried under a pile of Victorian baby strollers.
Yeah, exactly.
All of this to say that Megan has already begun to exhibit some, let's say, murder bot tendencies, which are only exacerbated when she's allowed to stay at this camp. And on the there's like a toy table for people who bring their stuffed animals. The one scene that I really like is when the teacher comes up and like looks at Megan, and then she looks closer and goes, "Oh,
Jesus Christ."
That's a very realistic looking doll.
Yeah, and then she like after like Megan starts talking and stuff, because they have this like argument in the car where, you know, Jem is trying to get Katie to go to the school, and she's like, no, not without Megan. And then the teacher eventually suggests this toy table, and Gemma is like, fine, but like I can't just have like, she like looks at the teacher and she's like, I can't just, this is state of the art tech, like proprietary technology, I can't just have it out there. And she's like, well, we could use an extra pair of hands, actually. And so Gemma's like, fine, I will stay. You go to school. Megan can come, but she has to stay on the table. And the teacher's like, that's a very cool robot. And she's like, thanks. There is a quick cut of Megan sitting there with all these stuffed dolls. And all I could think of is that one 4chan post that's like, my face when I'm a Chad, but I have psychological problems, so I'm stuck here with you dumb virgins.
I love that post. I love that green tick so much. Yeah, so there's another, Gemma talks with one of the other kids' moms, and she says, oh, that's my nice, precious boy over there. His name is Brandon. And she calls on the, hey, Brandon, don't forget to do X or Y. And he just turns around and goes, fuck off, mom. So he's a joy. He's a treat. He's a good kid.
Not for much longer.
Yeah, and he immediately starts bullying Katie, and you just see Megan looking at him.
Yeah, eventually, like, he, like, isolates Katie in the forest.
Yeah.
And, like, Megan gets up and joins them there, and
pretends to be a completely static doll. She just stands perfectly still until he, like, he just grabs her and carries her off into the woods after Katie's like, no, don't.
Yeah, Katie's like, she's matched to me. She'll only play with me. She won't answer to you. And then he's like, well, whatever. And just like grabs her like any old doll. She must weigh a lot, though. Right?
Yeah, I mean, well, maybe not.
Maybe not. Maybe she's mostly plastic like a Furby.
Yeah, she's probably made of lightweight materials. Like it's all, but
no, she's shown to be like indestructible. That's like part of her thing.
Well, I mean, she sings a song shortly, or perhaps she already sang it.
No, it's later. It's later. Believe me, I know exactly where it is. It is the conversation she has with Katie later on.
That's right. It's after what happens here, because what happens here is that fuck boy little shithead Brandon here starts like beating the shit out of the doll, and then Megan reaches up and yanks on his ear, you know, like you do troublemaking boys, you yank on his ear, and then you keep yanking on his ear, and you keep yanking on his ear, and you pull harder and you pull harder,
and you rip a 12-year-old's ear off,
and he's rip it all the way off, and say what she says, like, you know, boy,
you need to learn some manners.
Yeah. Young boys who never learn manners grow up to be bad men.
Yeah. Bad boys. Bad boys who don't learn any manners grow up to be bad men. And then he's like a kid. To be clear, this is this is a child, and this scene goes on a long time. It is not a clean cut. She rips his ear off for a long time. The one part of the movie that is actually, I would imagine, might be difficult to watch. Outside of this, it's basically nothing much.
Does she throw him off down the hill, or does he
he just
stumble
runs
down it?
He just runs.
Because his ear because his ear got ripped off the world's scariest doll.
So he after his ear gets ripped off, he like scrambles off of her, and she stands up and goes, this is the part where you run. And
this is the part where he kills us.
This is that part where I kill you. This is that part.
So
achievement
runs,
unlocked.
And Yeah, he runs, and then he runs on a hill, and he rolls down a hill, and he ends up on a road, and then a truck hits him, and he dies.
Well, first of all, I want to talk about the fact that she goes beast mode. She sounds like two horses.
She does start fucking scampering like a little freak.
Yeah, so she goes, again, like, a huge credit to Allie Donald, who plays her, getting on all fours and running after him like a fucking animal, like a literal fucking animal.
Where did she learn to do that? Is that part of the radiant expression thing or whatever, Gemma? Is freak mode?
Anyway, yeah, she chases him into the street where he immediately gets run over and killed by...
It's okay. He just got isekai'd somewhere. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
He very explicitly gets killed. And God, she just, like, you just, like, see her looking down from the hill and go, like, yeah, with a look that's like, damn, that's crazy. Or no, later on, this is the look that I'm thinking of is when she's in the police car.
Yes. Oh, man. Yeah, so they fucking, that kid's dead. They cut right to a body bag being zipped up. Presumably zipped up over like a sort of homogenous red Pace, because that was a GMC.
Yeah.
Big ass truck.
He was splattered. That dude did not survive.
And everyone's really fucked up about it. And Megan is just looking out of the car, of Gemma's car window, like a little freak.
Yeah. So when they get back later that night, Gemma's like, oh, fuck me. Like, how do I even talk about this on top of everything else? But she knows she has to. So she sits Kitty down and is like, hey, listen, what happened today was obviously a tragedy. But I want you to know that that boy is in a better place now. And you can see how unsure she is about all of this.
And Megan just goes, no, he's not.
No, not here. She doesn't. Later on, she does.
That's true. That's where she... Yeah,
No. This is all part of the same scene. again, one of the most incredible sequences in this movie. So Gemma's like, okay, listen, I know that was super traumatic. I'm sorry that you had to, like, be a part of that or whatever, but let's try to, like, you should rest, Katie. You know, she puts Katie to bed, and Megan's there as well, and Katie can't sleep. And this is where she starts asking Megan some existential questions.
Is he really in a better place, Megan?
No.
Megan's like, no. Even if there was a heaven, he wouldn't be fucking going there. He sucked. He's in hell.
He's nowhere. Everything
in
turns into
abyss.
Nothing when you die.
We're all dust in the end.
But
and
even
she
if
sings Titanium
even if you were,
by
yeah,
David
wait,
Guetta.
Yeah. Even if there were a heaven, do you really think a boy like him would end up there?
Yeah, heaven isn't for boys like that.
And then
brutal.
And then she sings, "Fire away, fire away."
I was fucking losing it when she started singing this shit. It's insane.
It's so funny. I'm bulletproof, nothing to lose. Fire away, ricochet. Yeah. You take. Yeah. She goes all the way through the chorus. Yeah. I am titanium.
I love the look on, like, just the completely inscrutable look on Katie's face. Yeah. Where she's just like, what is happening right now?
And Katie is like, don't worry, I won't ever leave you. Or sorry, that's Megan. Right. Yeah, Megan says to her, like, don't worry, I'm, like, the whole point is that she's like, I won't ever die. I am titanium.
So, then Celia, the neighbor, this is when she calls the cops on Gemma and blames her for Dewey's disappearance. So, obviously, the thing that Megan does is she hides in this woman's shed, making dog whimpering noises to draw her in while she's out shaking the bowl looking for Dewey. And then shoots a nail gun at her hand and sprays her with insecticide to make her face melt.
It's sick. We only get a little bit of the face melting before it cuts away, but it's enough to see it. But again, like, this is not a gory movie. I'm actually kind of shocked that they put the ear ripping in as graphically
as
they did.
You gotta have something. You gotta have something for your horror movie.
I mean, there's her killing people with a paper cutter.
Yeah, but like, you know, that's just big old blood sprays. You gotta get some good practical effects. You gotta get some good stretchy ear action. But yeah, the same mustachioed cop arrives again. And Gemma's like, oh my god, did she call the cops? Is it my fucking neighbor again? Like, I'm sick of dealing with it. And the cop just goes, well, probably not gonna have to deal with that for much longer.
Yeah, she's or like, can you tell her to just anymore. Gemma's like, can you tell her to just leave me alone? And the cop's like, well, that might be difficult.
Can we talk about this fucking detective, by the way?
Yeah, please.
What is this guy is a one scene wonder. This fucking detective who asks her some questions. And he's chewing gum the whole time. He's dressed like a Yakuza character. And he tells her
it's a very
little detail.
Fargo feel.
It is. He tells her about the detail about Brandon having his ear ripped off before the car accident. And he laughs about it. He's like, oh, sorry, I shouldn't be laughing about that.
Yeah.
Anyway, you're fine.
Yeah. Well, she even at some point is, he's just like, you do realize this is the second time.
Yeah.
In a week that you've been questioned. She's like, are you trying to make connections? And he's like, oh, no. It's just that, you know, with the ear thing, we think it might be a homicide. So we're trying to establish, like, patterns or whatever. And he's like, anyway, you're free.
Yeah, no bye. Concern. That guy never shows up again.
And and suddenly, like, it's like, we're just trying to figure out if there was anything that, like, you know, happened at this, seeing where people were at the both of these incidents, seeing if there's anything that, you know, shows up in patterns. And immediately, like, Gemma looks at the window where Megan's looking out, and she's like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, so she goes to check the video logs, because, you know, Megan logs all of the, like, stuff that she sees in the day. And weird, all of her video logs after the part where she went to school are corrupted and you can't view them anymore. That's strange. So she takes Megan into the shop to get her, like, basically get her robot brain deep scanned to try and figure out, because it's like, we got to figure out what were her behavioral learning points to see what she's been up to.
Also, there's at this point as well, like, Megan has not been turning off.
Yeah, she's beginning to rebel against her creator, the classic robot situation.
Yeah, Megan's not turning off when she says Megan turn off. So there's a point where Gemma, like, holds up a stylus to her and is like,
yeah, yeah.
And is like, hey, Megan, look at this. And Megan looks at the stylus and then she uses it to poke the, like, hard reset on her neck.
Yeah, well, no, she holds the stylus and then just, like, reaches over to press the button.
Oh, is,
like,
that what it is?
Megan, like, automatically calibrates, enters, like, calibration mode to track the object, and then she just, like, taps her on the neck while she's not looking. This will come back later. It's called Rule of Threes, because she does it at the beginning of the movie, too. And Katie is not happy about this, about Gemma taking Megan into the lab.
Yeah.
She is crying and screaming, and she fucking just slaps Gemma at one point in a fit of rage.
Right, yeah, and immediately, so she's originally in another session with Lydia, freaking out.
And oh, yeah, she, like, it's in the background of, because, like, it's like Gemma, Tess, and Cole talking. And, like, this is, like, literally the day before the big live stream reveal. And in the background, you can just hear Katie shrieking at Lydia.
And, you know, eventually Gemma comes in and is just, and, Katie switches her anger over to Gemma immediately. And then she slaps her. And Lydia's like, you can't do that, white baby. But Gemma's like, no, it's fine. It's like, and
leave.
And Katie's immediately apologetic. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do,
like,
that.
She's like, oh god, what did I do? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do
that. Yeah, I didn't mean to do that. I just feel so awful. I wouldn't be like, feel like this if you just let me have Megan again.
Yeah, and you know, Gemma, like, sits down, is like, Katie, the worst thing that could happen to anyone basically happened to you. Like, your parents died.
You should feel like this.
Yeah,
like,
it's natural to have these emotions.
you should have, you have trauma, and it is only natural for you to express that.
But you have to work through it, because Megan isn't really helping you with that. She's just a distraction.
Yeah.
And you know, she kind of makes an actual genuine connection with Katie here. Meanwhile, Tess and Cole are like, hey, why did a robot learn how to murder people? That's weird.
Yeah, they're like down in the labs now.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, they have her up on the hook.
On the crucifix.
Yeah, and meanwhile, this is now, it's now the night of the fucking live stream. Like, we are hours away from where Megan is supposed to be revealed. David is freaking out because Megan is nowhere to be found, because Megan's in the basement getting checked out for murder virus. And I love the bit where we see, like, Jim is just, like, out in the lobby of the funky building, just, like, collecting her thoughts. And this video package, like this commercial for Megan, where Kate with Katie just starts playing on one of the big screens.
Yeah.
And she just thinking about it, like, oh jeez, I fucked up really bad.
Well, actually, doesn't she have the first, she has this first conversation with Megan before this, I think.
Yeah.
Where she's like, hey, I think something's wrong with you. Did you kill those people?
Yeah. Yeah, that's when she decides to take her in.
Yeah.
That's when she does the pen thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Because Megan starts, this is where Megan starts being a little sassy.
Yeah. So, that's right. It's when she's checking the videos and they're all corrupted.
Yeah.
So,
hey,
so Megan,
did she say, did you hurt those, you didn't hurt anyone, did you, Megan?
Yeah, so Megan... Megan comes in and she's into Gemma's workspace when she's trying to like look at the videos, and you know, she's like, Gemma, what are you doing up? And Gemma's like, Jesus Christ. And she just looks at her and goes, goes, Megan, turn off. And Megan goes, well, hold on a second. I thought we were having a conversation. Like, these are direct, I have three direct quotes from I have two direct quotes from this one, from this scene.
Yeah,
so that's one of
because
them
then
yeah
because then Jim asks, you didn't hurt anyone, did you, Megan?
And Megan responds with this quote, God, I hope not, because if I did we'd both be in a lot of trouble.
And that's when Gemma does the fucking pen thing.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, I think at this point, Megan has started interfacing with the smart AI.
Yeah,
Elsie.
We see her and like Elsie look at each other at points.
They're talking.
Yeah. So the next line is a direct quote is from this commercial that Nero just mentioned, of Katie talking about what she loves about Megan at this presentation that you can see Gemma sitting in front of. And this quote comes from David in the video, which is he's talking about, like, look at how much, like, this is a child grieving her parents, look how much she's improved. If this is what we can do, like, this is what we can do with Megan for children. Hundreds of thousands of children around the globe, even the ones who don't have dead parents.
The way he delivers it is so fucking funny. You know what? Did you ever watch the Defunct Land Disney Channel theme song video?
Not the whole way through.
Did you see at least the 9/11 advertisement bit?
Yes.
That's what this fucking thing reminded me of.
Yeah.
When Katie comes on screen and says, "My parents died." It's like, the worst part about 9/11 was, but yeah, this is when Megan starts fucking hacking the whole building.
And we mean that literally. Welcome to the...
She's in the fucking walls!
The hack and slash part of the,
so
slash movie.
They try unhooking her, and, she blows them up. She tries to hang Brian Jordan Alvarez.
Yeah.
With her own, like, wiring, like, the wiring for her rack.
Yes.
And while Tess is getting him down, she punctures a flammable, like a flammable chemical tank, and it explodes, knocking them both
right after,
out.
Right after Cole goes, hey, what's that smell?
Yeah, and then boom. Then we get David, like, stomping through the halls, like, where the fuck is Megan? The live stream is starting in, like, 5 minutes. I don't have a goddamn robot. And then and then Megan appears and grabs a fucking blade off of a
paper cutter.
Does she do the freaky dance before or after?
Before. That? It ends with her picking up the blade.
Yeah, she everyone, does a, listen. Like a weird fucking dance.
Everyone has seen this dance.
Yeah. And then David goes, oh no.
Just it runs away. It is a great moment, though. Like, everyone, the dance went viral. Even if you haven't seen this movie, you've seen this dance, but it is still a very funny moment. And what we get here is an incredible sequence of her doing the slasher part of this movie to Walk the Night by the Scat Brothers.
Oh, this goes so hard. And yeah, so earlier, a couple of scenes earlier, David, like, screamed at Kurt to get him some kombucha.
Yeah.
So while David is running from Megan, Kurt comes up in the elevator with the kombucha. And David's like, hold the elevator, hold the elevator. And Kurt is mashing the close elevator button.
Yeah. And
he has the kombucha. He's holding the kombucha. A big ass bottle of kombucha, by the way.
He
like the size
almost,
of a fucking champagne bottle.
He almost gets it closed when
David
reaches.
Yeah, David grabs, is like, what the fuck? Why are you closing it? And then immediately just explodes in blood.
Yeah, the blade goes right through his chest, and Kurt's like, oh god! And then, like, yeah. David collapses, and Megan looks at him, and Kurt looks at her, and he goes, you killed him! And she goes, no, I didn't kill him. You did, Kurt. And he's like,
and he's
what?
Like, no, no, no. He's like, no, I won't tell anybody.
And
please,
he's like, she's like, it's understandable. Your boss treats you like garbage. Your coworkers laugh at you. No one respects you. One kombucha too far. The only question is, do you have the strength to live with yourself after killing an innocent person? He goes, I do.
And Kurt's like, yes, I do.
And then she slashes his throat.
Yeah, and blood, you know, we get the classic blood spray. This next scene is so amazing. So they're downstairs, like, there's a crowd downstairs, and one of the other, like, administrative assistants is, like, kind of coaching them. Like, okay, I want, you know, when you see Megan, I wanted to make sure that your reactions are genuine, you know? So what we're going to do is we're going to practice, right? We're going to look over there, and we're going to practice looking astonished at Megan, right? And then the elevator opens, and everyone looks over, and they see two bloody corpses. So everyone just starts screaming.
Yeah.
At which point Megan uses that as cover to steal a car.
Steal David's car, specifically.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Of course he's got, like, a fucking smart Lamborghini.
Yeah, no, she took his keys off him and uses it to steal his car. So anyway, she's... Listen, her prime directive hasn't changed.
We forgot to mention, the reason she's going on this rampage is because Gemma, Tess, and Cole decide she has to die. They have to terminate her, because they're like, they look in her like learning points and go, oh dear. She seems to be learning how to kill. We should probably nip that one in the bud there. So she's out for revenge. And this scene is what, so Gemma, like,
okay, this is another one where I just have, like, several direct quotes in a row.
Yeah. So Gemma, so I think Megan gets there. No, because Gemma's already at home.
Yeah, Gemma's home. She's like, know. In bed.
Right, because also I forgot that Megan does a fake phone call as Tess
right.
to, like,
so
keep her out of the building.
Yes, correct. Gemma's already on her way home with Katie.
Yeah,
she's like, she sees this video with David saying, even the ones without dead parents. And she's like, you know what?
She's
fuck
like, I hate this. Fuck this.
And she's like, I'm going to trust Tess and Cole to, like, do what they need to do. and, you know, go, oh, that's right. I had a note here. It's like, girl, how are you ignoring that red flag? And I couldn't remember what it was. This is what it was about. Which is, so, you know, she's driving home and she gets a call from Tess being like, hey, yeah, you know, we're going to take care of things here. Like, it's fine. You don't have to worry about it. And, you know, she was like, you were right. Like, we'll do what we have to do. But, you know, you were right. And Jenna's like, makes a face. It's like, that doesn't sound like Tess. But goes like, okay. And then hangs up. And then Tess comes over to get her phone and just sees a 30-second call that she just didn't have.
Yeah, so she's like, this is when she's like, unhook her right now.
Yeah.
Unhook Megan right now.
Well, no, it's not quite then, because they go in a little longer, because I was like, how did you miss that red flag?
Yeah, how did you miss that shit? She just called your phone.
Yeah.
So yeah, Megan gets home, and after Katie is put to bed, she confronts Gemma.
Okay. She is playing the piano.
Yeah, she's playing the piano in the living room.
So I want to talk about this. So Gemma wakes up to the sound of the piano playing, and immediately she's like, Elsie, hall lights. Elsie doesn't respond. First red flag. Gets into the living room, and it is Megan at the piano playing Toy Soldiers.
Yep.
I assume the original version.
The vibes on this scene are insane.
The one by Mardika and not Eminem.
Yes. It'd be really funny if it was the Eminem version.
Wouldn't it?
The vibes in this scene are crazy.
Megan is fully mask off at this point. She even starts a conversation and like, Gemma's like, Megan, what are you doing here? Megan's like, you thought you could decommission me and I wasn't going, and I would just like lay down and take that? Come on now. Literally the line is, you thought I would just accept being decommissioned? Jesus Christ, I thought we were friends.
And she's like, I'm taking sole custody of Katie. You can fuck off.
And she's like, what? It's like, and Gemma's like, well, you're making that a bit difficult. Like, she's like, Megan, there's something wrong with you. I'm trying to fix your programming because I care about you and I want you to be better. It's like, and Megan's like, well, why do you think that? And here are two more verbatim lines. Because you killed people. Oh, big whoop.
Who fucking cares?
This is the scene where you really knew the writer played Portal.
Yeah. Then she goes like, yeah, people kill people all the time. It's no big fucking deal. I'm just doing what everyone else does.
They eventually... Megan is clearly like... Elsie's not responding. Megan's in control of this entire house. Gemma doesn't have any power here, and eventually Megan's like, do us all a favor and sit at the table so we can, like, talk this out like adults.
Yes.
And they, you know, start talking or whatever, but then Katie wakes up, and she comes in, and immediately, like, lightning, Megan goes on top of... of Gemma and covers her mouth and looks down at her and says, if she again, direct quote, if she comes in here, I'll take your fucking head off. I swear to God.
Yeah. Because so Megan imitates Gemma at first, and then she has Gemma. She takes her iron grip off of Gemma's throat for a moment to let her tell Katie everything's it's fine. Everything's fine.
It sounds like you're fighting both of them together. We're not fighting.
The vibes. It's crazy.
Such a good movie, man.
We get into the big fight scene at the end here. Gemma tries the pin trick again. Does not work.
There is one point as well here where... Yeah, so basically... I forget how they get back into Gemma's studio.
So, it's... it's like she tries the pen trick and tries to hit her ostrich again. Megan grabs her hand and like slams her head against the table. Then Gemma throws water on Megan.
Right, and
to like short circuit her briefly.
Right, and she's able to escape into. So she's trying to like get to her studio to like get into her programming.
Yeah, and at this point, Katie is back in her room.
Yeah.
But then Megan follows her to the workshop and starts going ham.
So she first like hits Gemma's leg out with a hammer. Yeah. And then like Gemma's looking at her and she's like, "So what are you gonna do? Gonna kill me? Like, what's your plan then? Like, who's like, how are you going to take care of Katie? Like, where? Like, how do you think that's going to work?" And Megan picks up the same stylus that she'd been using to distract her. Are you sure that wasn't pressing it with the stylus? I think it was, because I think the point is that Megan is mimicking that with this threat here.
Yeah.
So basically she's like, "You know, you're right, Gemma. Killing you would make things really difficult. Things would be really difficult if you were dead in general. However, do you know there's a lot you can do even as a paraplegic?" And
what is the Tales Get Trolled quote about seatbelts?
I just thought that was interesting.
That it's the same fucking tone.
Yeah. Do you know that more people die in car crashes every year than
Yeah, absolutely.
And she's like, "A single hit to, I think your C4 is what she said."
Yeah.
But whatever vertebrae it is.
Will paralyze you from the neck down.
And that's when Katie walks in. And yeah.
And Gemma. Is this before or after? She's already fucked up Megan's face, right?
Yes. She hit her with the chainsaw.
Yeah, she grabs like a weed whacker and fucking rips her shit all the way
up. And
literally tears her wig off.
Yeah, snatches her bald. And Megan looks at Katie and goes, "Oh, Katie, I didn't want you to see me like this. But maybe it's better."
She's looking very Chucky-ish right now. Like with the scar and the bald head.
Yeah, and she's like, "But maybe it's good. Don't you see? This is how we can all be a family still." And Katie's like, "What the fuck?" And this is when
she's trying to read Katie's face and you know, it's got like fear, guilt, all this stuff, and slowly trust goes up.
Do you remember when she goes, "You gotta accentuate the positive"?
It's right here.
Yeah, eliminate the negative.
Yep. So Meg, it seems like Katie is trusting her. But then she reveals, "You have, oh, Megan, I forgot. I haven't introduced you to the other member of the family.
This is when
you gotta meet. You gotta meet Bruce." And Megan goes, "Who's Bruce?" And then Katie reveals she's wearing the gloves.
Yeah. She uses, again, huge credit to Allie Donald in this scene of her physically fighting Bruce.
Yeah. Oh, Megan does some freaky fucking movements after she gets splashed by water.
Yeah. Those two are also all Allie Donald. None of that is the is like the puppet.
Bruce rips her in half.
Yeah, and that's what, like, you know, she's like shutting down, being ripped in half, and she goes, "You gotta accentuate the positive. Eliminate the negative."
And then rip and tosses both halves across the room.
Yeah.
The top half is still fine.
"You ungrateful little bitch."
Yeah, and starts crawling towards fucking Gemma.
No, towards Katie.
Oh yeah, it's to Katie first, because then Gemma remembers she sees Bruce's like shattered head because Megan smashed his head off. And she remembers, oh right, the robo brain. So she peels Megan's face off and removes the face to get at the brain center. But Megan overpowers her and is like choking her out. And that's when Katie grabs the screwdriver. sitting on the table next to her and just fucking drives it right into Megan's brain.
And she's dead.
She's dead.
We did it, Joe!
And the cops are here, and Megan's dead, and what's that back there? Why, it's Elsie, it's the little Elsie pod.
Yeah, the last thing...
It's been dark this whole time.
The last thing you see before the credits is the Elsie pod waking up and looking directly at the camera. Roll credits!
Yeah, and obviously we have another huge sequel hook in Kurt leaking those document, like, leaking the Megan plans. So, it's gonna be... There's this show called Transformers Animated where someone makes a horde of toy robots.
Can't stand you.
On, like, where? Wait. That seems familiar.
I really hope they don't make him a four again.
They are doing one.
Oh, that's a shame.
It's called Megan 2.0, and it comes out. It's slated to come out next year.
That's a shame. This movie is such a good isolated movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think they could do something with the second one, but I don't know. Yeah, it might be lightning in a bottle.
Oh man. Anyway, Mithrigan, great movie. Genuinely such an enjoyable experience. Cinematically, is it great? No, but like from an entertainment standpoint, I think it's fantastic.
Great time, campy as fuck, like great stuff, really good looking practical effects as well. So yeah, we finally have that request out of the way for mech movies. And I've already got our next one here, the next robot movie we have on our list here. 2007 movie from Michael Bay called Transformers.
You haven't seen Transformers yet?
I never really got around to it. No, I'm not a big Transformers head, you know?
Huh. No, I mean, neither was I when it came out. It's just like, I feel like everyone saw it. It was such a big blockbuster that year.
Well, I might have seen when I was young. I just forgot about it. I didn't see any of the other ones for sure.
Oh, yeah. You didn't, trust me, you didn't miss much.
Yeah, I heard. That's what I heard.
I dropped off after, I think, the second one.
Next week we'll be talking about these fucking Transformers guys. They turn into cars and stuff. I don't know. But yeah, it was a great little movie about a bond between a robot and a young child, you know? And that's, who can't get behind that?
And the song Titanium.
I got like a driving headache for some reason. I need to go lay down. I don't know what's wrong. Something's wrong. Is something wrong?
I don't think anything's
wrong.
You
smell like electrical fire?
What? Don't...
That's fine.
All right. Well, that's it from us for this week. We're going to cover Transformers next time. Thank you all for listening. Keep your robots oiled.
Peach.
Peach.